Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast and radio show at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com for the entire back catalogue. You may notice in my voice there's a slight croaking, a little bit of She's Got Bette Davis Eyes, if you wish to call it that. Let that not put you off this introduction, and that is literally down to the beautiful and fine, sometimes chilly elements that we have whilst I work in the great outdoors. To today's interview and the extra that you have midweek, this interview first aired on Clonline Radio, there, clonlineradio.com and at Clonline Radio on the Twitter side of things. The interviewee is Mose Jacobs, and I guess we tend to go a little bit true why Peter and why the Sideshow. The why question is something that I've been asked all my life. It's usually, why did you do it? And now that I have matured slightly, the why did you do it maybe has a slightly different meaning. For those of you who don't know me as an individual that well, I guess it might give you a little bit of a better insight into just why. Take a listen, enjoy. Normal podcast servicing resumes in about 2 days' time. At Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com. And my thanks again on this occasion, the wonderful ladies and gentlemen of Clonakilty, and in particular, Clonline Radio. Thank you very much, lads. Enjoy.
Hello, Peter Donegan. We are in Clonline Radio's studio and we're talking to you. And where are you at the moment?
I am where I guess I should be. I am standing in the middle of a garden. I've actually gone from the front garden to the back garden. That's obviously what I do for a living. And yeah, the sun is shining. I'm in North County Dublin at this moment in time.
Okay.
And yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you too. The sun is not shining here, but I'm glad it is over there. Before we go any further, perhaps you could introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what your relationship is with the sod, with the gardens of Dublin or Eden or Ireland, whatever.
Okay, so I'm Peter Donegan. I used to grow plants under my bed when I was 5 years of age. I did my first garden at 10. I went out on my own as Donegan Landscaping at 24, 25 years of age. Won my first awards for design and build of gardens at about 30 years of age. The first one was a 55-acre 18th century estate, and the second was a 17th century 27-acre estate. Donegan Landscaping is now 15 years in business, and if you know basic mathematics, you'll know I'm obviously a little bit older than 24 now.
Yes.
And I think about 5 years ago to my relationship with Clon Radio, or Clonline, as you very lovely call it, I started a garden podcast into the tail end of my iPhone originally, which then turned into a radio show. It's no longer a radio show now, but the Sideshow was Ireland's best podcast 2 years running.
Wow.
And this year we are up for award against, I believe, the BBC. Last year, there were six people up for award for the radio end of it in the UK. Five of them are BBC based, and one was the Guardian newspaper, their podcast. So we're I guess this year, most likely, more than not, we're up against them for award for best radio show /podcast.
Oh, that's great. That's really amazing.
Yeah.
And that's in the UK. That's a UK based award.
Yeah, so the Garden Media Guild has been on the go for some time. They I've huge amount of respect for them, and I've been watching them from, I guess, afar for a very long time now. And it would have certain categories. Obviously, they've got a larger population. London would be about 17 million people. Yeah. Ireland is about four and a bit anyway. But also, I guess, horticulture wise are concentrating on that, the interest in the UK, even if you look at the amount of garden television programs they have alone, and we have one that lasts, I think it's 5 episodes in Ireland, that does us for the year. But in the UK, I mean, they've got Titchmarsh, they've got Monty Don, you've got Gardener's World, you've got it on ITV, it's literally round the clock, and there are probably 5, 6, 7 shows that I would know off the top of my head. So they're a long way ahead of us. And I guess, you know, Ireland has a little bit, to be fair, always looked across the water, in particular towards Chelsea Flower Show, to the Royal Horticultural Society. And again, to their credit, and we have to give credit where it is due, the oldest horticultural association in the world, the oldest and greatest horticultural garden show in the world as well, which is Chelsea. And there you have it. So we're probably going to be pipped against the big boys this October.
Yeah, of course, the English are also way ahead because they had lots of colonies to import exotic flowers from. Sorry.
Well, you could say that. But they look, when you take a 200-year-old institution, and one of the guests that we had on the show is a perennial, the Gardeners Royal Benevolent Society, and what they did, bearing in mind they're on the go since before the famine, which is 1847. That's how old they are. And it's a charity specifically set up way back in the day to help gardeners who at the time would have become, let's say, a little bit injured or surplus to requirement. When you look at the work they're doing today, what they're actually doing is not so much that anymore, where you may have an injury and you might have had a pension 150, 160 years ago, but to now what they're doing is they're helping guys like me who fall on hard times. And it might be true, you know, if I get injured, let's be really frank about it, I don't have an income, and make no bones about it, the Sideshow doesn't make me money. At the same token, Donegan Landscaping essentially is what pays my bills. So yeah, they have a really long legacy, and our main garden show in Ireland is Bloom in the Park, which is just 10 years old. We are only babies in context, as far as I would be concerned.
But growing fast, I think. You said something about your bedroom. I don't want to trespass there, but how did you start develop this obsession or hobby or whatever you call it, you know, your life's work? How did that spark
off? It was very much that I was one of 8 children, first of all. So cutting grass was a decent way of earning good pocket money if you wanted, you know, to buy new hurling gear or a new pair of runners or go somewhere. That was the first part of it. But in reality, what had happened was I grew radish seeds with my grandfather when I was about 4 or 5 years of age. And the second year, I tried to grow them myself, and I read gardening books. And the opening line on the book, and I have a copy of it now, I found one, and the opening paragraph on it is, start by digging the ground 2 foot deep. That was the opening line, and I took it in its literal sense. I dug a trench 2 foot deep, and I put these seeds at the bottom. And of course, 2 things happened, which I now know, having studied horticulture. All of the weed seeds germinated at the top, and the seeds that I sowed never saw the light of day. So to figure out which seeds were which, or which leaves I believed were mine, I had to therefore identify the plants, which we now know were all weeds, by their seed leaves. And so that taught me a little bit of plant identification.
But then I started
to grow plants under my bed, because I wanted to wake up in the middle of the night and see had they grown a little bit. Obviously they hadn't, but I didn't know that when I was 5. And it kind of spiraled out of control from there. But yeah, under my bed, then they went on top of the wardrobe, and then they went down into my dad's garage. And of course, at the time, they started to lean towards the only source of light, which was over the garage doors. And I did not know why this was happening. I now know it is I'll use a long name, which is phototropism, plants leaning towards light. But the question in my head at 5, 6, 7 years of age was always, why is this happening? And no grown-up could give me the answers. And I went off down to the library again to try and find those. And I obviously then ended up studying horticulture. The bug caught me, but make no bones about it, grown-ups in my life who took the time to give me those answers played a massive role in me being able to do what I do now, and having the understanding that I do now, never mind going and studying it and having the letters after your name, if that makes any sense.
But does the question why still play a part in your life? Is that still what drives you? Because you didn't start with success, you started with failure and trying to find out why you failed, which is quite interesting, but you're still doing it. So what drives you at the moment?
Well, it's a funny thing, and we this comes up over and over again where plants you know, pass and plants die, and now I have the qualifications. So the only difference is now people can't say, well, he does not know what he's talking about. They kind of have to take it as it is. But in reality, what will happen in anybody's gardens, and we had this conversation yesterday, myself and friends of mine, you put down five trees and they're €2,000 a piece, they're €35,000 a piece, or they're €10 a piece, and one of them dies. You can only really do like a CSI Miami plant life variation post it happening. You can't stop it from happening. If a living organism wants to pass away, if nature wants to decide, or if the plant decides, look, I just don't want to do it anymore, we can analyze it, but you can only give answer into the calculator and press the square root button. You can only come out with a pure and thorough answer post it happening, and you can maybe try and improve on that. But horticulture is an ongoing series of these why questions over and over again, and I average probably 2, 3, 4 calls per week where it's people saying, I've got a plant, and I'm kind of going, okay, what's the problem? And they describe leaves to you, and you go, right, have you done this? Have you done this? And you've done this? And they do no. And it's, you go to point B instead of going to point A. But these questions come up over and over again. And yes, to answer your question, I still have that childlike, how do I best describe it? Like falling in love when you are 17 years of age and you do crazy things. I say crazy things. You in the olden days, in the 80s, you might have made a mixtape. Somebody might have baked a cake. You might have stood outside our window at 2 o'clock in the morning throwing pebbles at that window. But it's something that as grown-ups, you hope maybe that you don't lose. But at the same token, it is what makes the heart beat a little bit faster. And in horticulture, I guess, and I still hope that pitter-patter in the horticultural sense never leaves me. I hope the day it leaves me is the day I'll probably retire.
I don't think it will. You probably won't retire. So people come to your business and say, I have an empty plot of land, or they say, I have a garden and I don't like the way it looks and I'm moving into a new house. Is that the sort of situation you get called in?
It's a mixture of the both, to be quite fair. So normally it's at this stage of the game, and with the internet the way it is, people can kind of see the projects that you've done, so they can do their little bit of research. The online side of it, make no bones about it, of getting to know somebody a little bit better. I think there are always two options. You can turn around and say, how much would you like to tender or quote for a three-course meal, and somebody will always invariably come in with a price of €6, and somebody will come in with a price of, let's say, €18.99, and then you turn around and you'll end up with somebody saying, well, how about I just go to that restaurant because the food is beautifully prepared. I know it's going to cost me money, but I'm willing to pay for that. So in my case, it's usually the latter, which is, we have a place that we don't like, be it existing or non-existing, be it a new build or a build where the landscape has just got a little bit tired. And that's where you'd probably call me in and say, how do we best go about this before you actually want it done? Whether it's like, do I go out and cut grass once a week and clip a few hedges? Probably not, unless you're very closely related to me.
And what are your principles? I mean, how do you, because there are very many different designs for gardens and concepts. What is yours?
Yeah. What are my principles? I'll be honest with you. There are gardens that I've designed that I might turn around and let's translate this into the music sense. So there was the old adage of Blur or Oasis, if you're a Father Ted fan, or you're just into the 90s Mancunian type scene. And in reality, if we take it at that level, and you said to me, would you like to listen to that music? Yeah, that's absolutely okay. Maybe going a stage further, you might turn around and go Rolling Stones. You might turn around and say Led Zeppelin. You might say something like Hendrix. In reality, not every garden I like is to my entire taste. But that's not what it's about. It's not a Peter Donegan Memorial series of gardens over a 50-year career period. It's you're the client. You are the most important. This is what you like to listen to. It may be classical music. It may be something a little bit more jazz, or God only knows. And equally in garden terms, make no bones about it. Greatest point I was ever taught coming out the gates of horticulture college was that client is king. What they want is, I might be able to direct them and say, you know, you shouldn't have that or you shouldn't do it that way. But do I have one concurrent team in gardens that I build? No, I've done the 17th century and 18th century, as I said before. I've done the extremely modern, the extreme low maintenance, and I mean to a point of extreme. And then at the same token, I guess I've done gardens where for show, probably more primarily where the main feature of them has ended up at an electric picnic a couple of years ago now. But nonetheless, you know, to go from 17th century estates to let's call it a rock and roll festival, there's a grave difference in between. So, no, I think I'll go back to that childhood thing. All I ever wanted to do was make gardens. I get to do that for a living. I'm absolutely blessed. The only thing I won't do is one that you might say is entirely terrible. There's a rude word that I could use that begins with S and maybe ends with E, but we won't say that on air. I won't go to that standard, if that makes any sense.
Perhaps. You said you you won two awards, and I think you mentioned big estates. Could you tell a bit more about how that came about and how you won these awards?
So at the time, I think, again, it probably goes back to that point of somebody saying he's the person I'd like to look after or to design or to look after the bill, essentially, to run the budgets, to run the spend, to make sure the overall team is on almost both cases. The infrastructure, as in the buildings, were there, but the landscape was pretty much non-existent. But that's what happens in the great outdoors. Make no bones about it. If you don't look after something, some other form of nature or the parts that you don't want to will take over. They'll take over the buildings, they'll take over the more exotic plants, the more vigorous ones will do that. So I'm sure time and nature did what it usually does and made a little bit of a ruin of it. And so, yeah, the calls came in. I assume historically based on reputation, I think I had been looking after the landscape in that one of the golf clubs in the north side of Dublin up in Howth. And maybe that's where it started, I'm unsure. But yeah, both of them were three-year bills. Both of them would have been, at the time, seven-figure gardens. Both of them went up for award as designer and contractor, both under Peter Donegan or Donegan Landscaping. And one year after the other, both won things that came in a frame and had a rubber stamp on a piece of paper, which was delightful, you know. But again, it's as silly as this might sound, I would take as much pride in doing my sister's front garden on an extremely low budget, but as I would on doing the greatest larger bills that come with greater larger pressures. It's the end result. It's seeing that person smile. It's somebody turn around saying, I like what you created for me. And be you a painter or a musician or in a privileged position to do something that is creative in exchange for which people give you some money, let's be quite frank about this. Uh-huh. It's a beautiful feeling when you, number one, receive that check in brackets, but also number two, when they turn around and say thank you, shake your hand and smile for what you have done. So I'm make no bones about it. I take nothing for granted. I'm in a very privileged position. I'm extremely humbled by the whole thing, and I'm still doing what I always wanted to do, which is just making gardens and in the great outdoors, double underlined, the great.
And when you do the Sod Show, which you do a weekly podcast?
Yeah, so the Sod Show is weekly. It started off on, I think when it evolved from 5 minute podcast to 28 minute radio show, that's probably where it started to change. Things became a little bit on the serious side, but yeah, every Friday in iTunes, good podcast stores, and up on sodshow.com, you'll find the Sod Show Garden podcast is there for the listening. And it's, historically it's and to present day, it's been a very eclectic mix of voices. A lot of them for the greater part of 2016, they've been the very popular voices from the UK mainly. And then of recent, obviously, I had a very beautiful trip to West Cork again, where West Cork Garden Trail took me a little bit under their wing, Miriam and Bev, and brought me around and introduced me and brought me to the homes and the gardens of, I think it was 14 of the entire of West Cork Garden Trail over the space of about 2 days.
Okay. So, okay, can you mention some names of people you've interviewed or gardens you've podcasted?
Well, of recent, I think, as we talk today, David Tanner of Glenview Gardens, he is on the show. This is the podcast. If you were to tune in just after listening to this, you'll pick that up. Last week, we would have had Serge de Thibault of Bamboo Park. And prior to that, we would have had Tony O'Mahony of Inishbeg Estate. Tony is the head gardener there. So it was just a taster. Uh-huh. We've only done about three Irish shows so far this year in its entirety. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the entire of the Sideshow went to the UK. And we took a little bit of a step back then. And when you look at those first three shows, I mean, the stories on them are nothing short of amazing. But I mean, I've done them all from, I was honoured and humbled again to stay at a Bantry House, the kindness of the owners of West Cork from, let me see, I'm trying to think very, very quickly off the top of my head, but I think it was picked up again by the West Cork people, and I think also by the West Cork Times, they picked up on it again, and the two lads from Ballycommon House, I was out there as well. But we've got an entire series of them. We'll run them over the course of the next couple of months before their season kicks off again, but some of them are just one man literally and his dog. Some of them are husband and wife teams, and some of them are entire teams of gardeners, and they are make no bones about it, again doing a beautiful, beautiful job. West Cork has a lot to be proud of.
Yeah, certainly. And do you, if you, this was on location, do you always do your shows on location, or do you also do them as we are doing now, at a distance?
Yeah, before you go any further, sorry, there's just a wee child crying in the background, but that's allowed. I'm standing out somebody's back garden. I try as best as I can to do the shows face-to-face. And I say as best as I can. You got to bear in mind, like, as it stands, Peter doesn't get paid for doing the side show. There's no logic reason for me to do this bar. It's to use the French term, pour l'amour de jeu, it's for a love of the game. But there is nothing greater than somebody shaking your hand saying, here is my gardens, come look around, and you being able to describe that. And sometimes it's a little bit false, I say, or feel it's a little bit false to get somebody to describe their gardens. That's like me trying to say how beautiful or how good looking I am. And it always sounds much better when you say how good looking or good looking I am, or how my sense of humor is X, Y, or Z. And that always is much better. And I don't think I could have had West Cork personally on the show and not have gone and seen those gardens. I think it probably would have felt a little bit lazy, or like I didn't want to be entirely bothered about going there. And yeah, it was beautiful to go and see David and to sit in his kitchen and to speak to his wife Mary and to realize the amount of time that they actually put in, and to talk to Tony and to see how his career and how he's moved up to head gardener, and you know why on God's earth, you know, when you talk to Serge de Thibault, that whole childlike question again coming up over and over and over again, why would anybody in their right mind want to build a 5-hectare park in West Cork, number one, bearing in mind he's from Belgium of origin, and do nothing in it but essentially bamboos, let's be quite frank about it. And it just baffled me, and he tried to answer me, and I still don't know whether I've got, but then I suppose he could have turned around to me and said, well, why do you grow plants under your bed? But West Cork and West Cork Garden Trail is it's head-scratchingly beautiful and wonderful, and I genuinely cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, if you look at gardens in general, and you must look at a lot of gardens, what tends to kindle your enthusiasm? Is it trees? Is it plants? Is it lines? Is it combinations, colours, smells?
I'll be honest on this one. There's two things, and I'll go back to the falling in love analogy. It's sometimes you walk into a room, a nightclub, a bar, a pub, and you see a woman on the far side of the bar, and you don't know why you're attracted to her, but you are. And this is a very bad analogy, but bear with me here on this journey in my sometimes silly little head. But equally in gardens and interior design also, maybe if that's your thing, you walk in, you sit in a room and you don't know why you stayed 4 or 5 hours, but you did. You just feel something that is a warmth, a glow. The weather could be not in your favor, and yet you still stayed there for 4 or 5 hours. And what you generally find, and in particular, again, I'm not trying to woo or warm myself or warm the people of West Cork a little bit more towards me, but when you go and see the gardens of West Cork, be it Bantry House, be it Ballycommon, be it Bamboo Park, there's something just in the people who own them that you realise that they've put a little bit more into it than just sticking a few plants in the garden. There's a humble, beautiful, warmth, welcome there. And then I think you go and you see the landscape. But I mean, we do it in Ireland a lot. You walk into a pub and you don't like the barman, so you essentially hate that pub. There's nothing wrong with the building. There's nothing wrong with the structure. There's nothing wrong with the drink that they serve. But if you have a fallout with the barman as an individual, you tend not to go back there sometimes. And in gardens, it's a little bit the same. And there's a whole people thing that wraps itself around it. And as I said to you, Glenview Gardens, to pick the first three shows that I've heard so people listen to this can go back and listen to them and maybe understand a little bit better what I'm saying. But when you take David Tanner's garden, Glenview, and when you take Bamboo Park, and when you take Ballycommon, and when you take Bantry House, when you take any of those first two guests, even Inish Beg, the first two that we had on, and you try and compare them or contrast them, none of them even remotely resemble each other in any way whatsoever. But the people have extremely kind hearts, and there's something, there's a je ne sais quoi, there's a something extremely, extremely beautiful, and it warms you and it makes you want to go back. And funnily enough and coincidentally, just to back that up a little bit extra, two of my friends, Anthony and Darren, they heard the Inish Beg podcast and they heard the Bamboo Park podcast, and they and me are due back down to Cork, West Cork, in 2 weeks' time. Sorry, not this Friday coming, but the Friday afterwards, to go camping to see those first three Sideshow podcast gardens again. And that's not by me. It's that they rang me and said, will you bring us back down?
Yeah, yeah.
And also to back it up, you got to bear in mind that I'd spent 3 days in West Cork. I was supposed to go on a holidays camping down near enough to Athlone. I changed where I was supposed to go camping, and I stayed camping again on in Sexton's campsite for another 5 days down near Clonakilty, which is where you are.
Oh, yeah, that's we look forward to meeting you here. Peter, before we go, because we're nearing the end of the program, do you have any particular song that you would like us to play after this, like particular type of music?
Oh, God, I think if you were to turn around and say to me you had a little bit of Jimi Hendrix there, and I'd probably go with The Wind Cries Mary, because my sister is Mary, and that's whose garden I'm standing in at this moment.
Okay.
That's just by pure coincidence, but thanks very much for asking.
Okay, well, thanks very much for talking to us. Say hi to Mary, and we look really forward to hearing your sod show on a regular basis. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much. An absolute pleasure, my dear. Take care.
Bye-bye.